We checked our gear and watched television in the afternoon. The television was hooked up to a small generator, and we got more noise than picture, but that was okay. We watched a game show that had been taped. I knew most of the answers and impressed everybody. It started to rain. A lieutenant, not our platoon leader, came in and spoke to Sergeant Simpson. He nodded and then, when the lieutenant had left, told us to pack up our gear. We were going on patrol. A chopper came in quickly from just over a stand of trees. We were airborne less than a half a minute after the chopper had touched down. We skimmed over the treetops for a little under 10 minutes before touching down in the landing zone, or LZ, as Simpson called it. It was exciting, a little scary. This is what I had been trained for. I thought about my knee, if it was going to be okay. You could get into surveillance with your test scores, a lieutenant had said. Maybe even Army intelligence. An officer at the classification center had told me that if I could play ball, I could always find a post to play for. I chose basketball. I was assigned to the infantry with the understanding that I was going to play ball for Fort Devens. 2 good games led to a write-up in the post paper. Then I started dreaming again. Enough write-ups sent to the NBA, and who knew what might happen. Then there was the game against Fort Monmouth. A quick move at the top of the key, drive through the middle, leap, leap, twist, and jam the ball through the hoop. I had come down amid a mass of sweating bodies, had landed on a sneaker instead of the floor. My knee had twisted. The pain burned through the joint into the thigh. My season was over.
Perry, wake the fuck up!
I looked at Sergeant Simpson and saw that he looked genuinely pissed. We were going past a flat area. Off to the right, there were short trees with wide trunks. A quarter mile off to our left, there was a wooded area that ran halfway up a small hill. Even from where we walked, I could see that near the top of the hill, the trees were just charred sticks. On the very top, they were black silhouettes against the sky. I looked from side to side, telling myself not to daydream again. The regular guys in the squad walked differently. They seemed to do a kind of slow lope, lifting their feet more than they had to. I thought it must have been because of all the mud. Monaco, a sweet-faced Italian kid who looked as scared as Jenkins, was on point out in front of the squad. The regular squad guys took their positions, leaving me, Pee-wee, Johnson, and Jenkins in the middle. Simpson said that a plane had spotted 2 guys with what looked like surveying instruments.
They could be laying out some kind of assault plans, he said.
For the first 10 minutes, I had to wipe my right hand on my fatigues at least 12 times. I kept imagining VC popping up and me not being ready to fire. We were on flat ground going along a row of small rice paddies. I didn't see anything. Nobody saw anything. We walked, or it seemed, wandered for nearly an hour before Simpson called in the chopper to take us back. We went to a pickup zone that was different from where we had landed and squatted in the knee-high grass. Simpson and this corporal named Brunner kept us covered while we mounted the chopper. Then they were in and the chopper was off. Then we were back to our base area.
Y'all looked okay out there, Simpson said. You gotta stay alert like that all the time.
We started back toward the camp. It was less than 100 yards. We had been told that there were minefields and trip flares planted around the perimeter. Sergeant Simpson had a map of our way back in. The path we had to walk up was covered by a brace of M60 machine guns. The guys manning them looked bored. There could have been a whooshing noise. I wasn't sure. I just heard Sergeant Simpson yelling for us to stay on the path. The other regular squad guys were already down. I was in the dirt. My eyes were closed. I could hear somebody screaming.
Oh God, oh God, oh God.
Noises. Somebody saying that it was a booby trap. Sergeant Simpson talking into the radio. I opened my eyes. Everybody else was up. I got up as quickly as I could. Some of the guys were looking around, their weapons moving, shaking almost as if they were alive, looking for an enemy to fire upon.
Keep those pieces still. Keep them down.
Sergeant Simpson's voice had changed. He barked commands.
Get into the camp. Get into the camp.
Brunner was dragging somebody. I looked behind me. I couldn't see anything. It was light out, but all I could see was a few feet in front of me. My vision didn't go any further. We got back to the camp. Two sergeants opened the barbed wire fence. They pulled the wounded man in. I looked. There was a shard of metal protruding from Jenkins's chest. The blood gurgled out of the wound it made and sprayed along the concave metallic surface. He tried to bring his hand to it, to touch it. A medic had reached him and pushed his hand away. Jenkins's face was white and twisted as he struggled to look down at his wound. There were bubbles on the wound as he struggled for a final breath, and then that too stopped. Chapter 4. You got the tags? The supply guy had a long face, and his mouth twisted oddly when he spoke. How many bags you got there? There was a neat stack of dark bags on the shelf. Enough, he said, handing me the plastic heavy bag. What'd he do, step on a mine? Yeah. That's what happens, he said. They sneak in and plant a mine on your path, and you don't know where the hell to walk. Oh. I took the bag out to where Simpson and Lieutenant Carroll waited. They lifted Jenkins by the shoulders of his uniform. Sergeant Simpson used a first aid patch to pick up something that had erupted from the hellish wound on Jenkins's chest and fallen on the ground near him. He placed it in the bag at his side. I thought I would throw up. I stood along with the other guys in the squad until the bag had been zipped up. We started back to the hooch. On the way, I looked back at the body bag again. Sergeant Simpson and Lieutenant Carroll were talking together. The body bag was at their feet. I turned away and went to the hooch. Monaco came over and sat on the edge of my bunk. For a while, he didn't say anything. Then he put his hand on my shoulder. You know him? No, I said. I just met him at the replacement company. Sometimes it goes like that, Monaco said. He started to say something else, then shrugged it off and left. I wanted to say more to him. I wanted to say that the only dead person I had ever seen before had been my grandmother. I wanted to say that when I saw her, I was ready, walking into the darkened church with the family and sitting in the first pews. But Jenkins was different. Jenkins had been walking with me and talking with me only hours before. Seeing him lying there like that, his mouth and eyes open, had grabbed something inside my chest and twisted it hard. The neat pile of body bags was waiting for the rest of us. There were enough there. The supply clerk had reached for the top one without even looking, to know that they expected that many of us would be going home in them. I didn't know what to think about what had happened. I didn't know what to feel. I touched my fingers to the palm of my hand. I could feel my fingers. It was only inside that I was numb. Lieutenant Carroll, our platoon leader, came in. He was a quiet guy, with dark hair and dark, calm eyes and an uneasy smile. I never felt that he was comfortable with himself. I hadn't had a chance to talk with him yet, but sometimes I would see him drift off into his own daydreams and be embarrassed when we caught him at it. When the old guys, the guys that had been through it before, saw him, they put their cards down and their magazines and gathered around him. I got up and nudged Pee-wee, who was lying face down on his bunk. Lieutenant Carroll took off his helmet and bowed his head.
Lord, let us feel pity for Private Jenkins and sorrow for ourselves and all the angel warriors that fall. Let us fear death, but let it not live within us. Protect us, O Lord, and be merciful unto us. Amen.
In the morning, in the mess tent, I asked Lieutenant Carroll why he had called Jenkins an angel warrior.
My father used to call all soldiers angel warriors, he said, because usually they get boys to fight wars. Most of you aren't old enough to vote yet.
How old are you?
23, he said.
How come you're not retired? Lieutenant Carroll stayed in our hooch for a while and helped check our supplies. He asked if we were short or anything, and Monaco said we could use some more 3-day passes.
I got a letter from Virginia Union.
A brother we called Bruce sat on a footlocker next to Lieutenant Carroll. His real name was Brewster, so I could see where Brew came from.
They said I can probably get into the theology school there, but they can't accept me formally until 6 months before my admission date.
Did you write to that school in New York I told you about? Lieutenant Carroll asked.
No,
Brew grinned.
From what I've heard about New York, the temptations might be too great for me.
If the temptations don't get you, then you gotta look out for Smokey Robinson and the Miracles,
Pee-wee called out. You know, Lieutenant Carroll had spread all the extra first aid packs on the floor in front of him.
My brother went to theology school, and I almost followed him. You can still go,
a guy called Wallowick said from his bunk.
It's good for a priest to be older. I might have too many doubts now, Lieutenant Carroll said.
If you turn to God, he'll take away your doubts,
Bruce said.
I don't have doubts about God, Lieutenant Carroll said. I'm just not that sure who I am anymore.
He gathered the first aid kits together and asked Brew if he would give them out. Then he got his weapon and said he would see us later.
He don't look like a priest, Pee-wee said after Lieutenant Carroll had left. He used to act more like a holy guy or something when he first got over here. He never cursed or anything like that.
Wallowick was putting powder on a rash he had.
Then one day, we were trying to clear a road and some guys got trapped in a ditch off to one side. We were on the other side of the road and we could see them, but we couldn't get to them. It was getting dark and we knew they couldn't last. Charlie was throwing everything at them. Then Lieutenant Carroll just went wild and stormed across the fucking road. We went after him. We were shooting at guys maybe 3 or 4 feet from us. We finally wasted all of them and cleared the road. He hasn't been the same since, but we all found out what kind of a guy he was that day. When the chips were down, he put his ass on the line for the guys.
You get the guys out of the ditch okay?
Pee-wee asked.
Uh-uh.
Wallowick shook his head.
That's why you guys are in the squad.
I wrote Mama a letter all about how Jenkins had got killed. Then I tore it up and decided not to tell her about it. It would only get her upset. Instead, I told her more about Pee-wee. I didn't want to tell her about Jenkins for another reason, too. I didn't know how I felt about it. In a way, I was really sorry for Jenkins. But there was a small voice inside me that kept saying that I was glad that it wasn't me that was killed. I didn't want anybody to see me putting that in a letter. They brought a VC into camp to question. They questioned him and then they took him into a hooch they used for storage while they decided what they were going to do with him. Pee-wee had been in there to get extra clips earlier and thought he might have lost his comb there. He went into the hooch to look for his pick, and the VC was sitting in there and started a conversation with him.
"Sucker spoke better English than I did," Pee-wee said. "What was he talking about?"
Brunner asked. Brunner had a thick neck and short blonde hair. He also seemed to have a chip on his shoulder.
"Asked me where I was from and stuff like that," Pee-wee said. "I thought he was friendly, you know." "You tell him where you were from?" "Yeah, and he told me he used to go to the Flicks down on State Street and even asked me if I knew some chick named Thelma."
"Then what happened?"
"Then he asked me for a cigarette. And we was sitting there smoking when the captain come in. That's when all hell broke loose. The fool jumped on me and tried to get my pistol, and the captain run up to him and punched him in the face."
Then they had tied the VC up and threw him in the back of a Jeep to take to an intelligence unit, and the captain gave Pee-wee hell for giving information to the enemy. Pee-wee said he was glad he gave him some information.
"How come?"
Monaco was cleaning his rifle again.
"'Cause if the Kong ever get to State Street, I want to be on their side,"
Pee-wee said. Wallowick, a Polish kid with dimples who looked like he had more teeth than he needed, looked up from his magazine, flashed a smile, and went back to reading.
"By the time we get out of here, there won't be any Kong left,"
Brunner said.
"We'd get out of here a lot faster if we took them all to Hollywood."
Lobel was tall and a little pudgy. His hair looked as if he had given himself a perm or something. He was almost as tall as me, but soft-looking. He didn't look feminine or anything. Just soft.
"What are you going to do with the Viet Cong in Hollywood?" I asked.
"Look what they did after World War II," he said, getting up on one elbow. "We made 100 war movies, and we brought all the Germans over here and gave them nice little bit parts, and they were very happy. We brought the Japanese over and gave them little bit parts, and they were happy. Now all we have to do is to stop this silly war and start making the movies right away. We take all these little slant eyes over to Universal, give them SAG cards, and put them to work."
"That is a fag solution, only capable of coming from the mind of a fag," Brunner said.
"Hey, Corporal,"
Lobel got up on one elbow.
"Just because I don't have my serial number tattooed on my genitals does not mean I'm a fag."
"You wouldn't have enough room for more than 3 numbers anyway,"
Brunner said. He looked around to see who was laughing. Nobody was. We got mail call and I didn't get anything. I had to find somebody to write to beside Mama so I would get mail. I couldn't depend on Kenny to write. There was something happening up north the next morning. For about an hour, we heard artillery. Simpson was in our hooch talking about squirrel hunting outside of Petersburg, Virginia, and Monaco was getting on his case.
"You call that sport?"
Monaco asked.
"I mean, there you are. You gotta weigh 200 pounds, and you got a rifle, and you're against a squirrel that weighs maybe 2 or 3 pounds, and he ain't got nothing." "Man, it's a damn sport,"
Simpson protested.
"You know what a sport is?"
"Do I know what a sport is?" Monaco pointed to himself. "I played football and baseball for Marist High School in Bayonne. I made all county. That's sport. I don't have to shoot no little animals."
"You had you a rifle,"
Pee-wee said.
"You could have made all world."
"The way I figure it,"
Monaco went on,
"if you hunt a squirrel with a rifle, what do you hunt a bear with? Artillery?"
"Call in some white phosphorus on him," Bruce said. "That'll get his attention until the jets zero in."
White phosphorus, or Willie Peter as they called it, was an artillery round that burned the crap out of anything it touched.
You don't know nothing about no hunting.
Simpson was getting pissed.
You don't know what hunting is.
What he's trying to say.
Lobel was flat on his back. There was a can of coke on his chest.
Is that the white phosphorus is enough. After it burns the bear's ass off, then the good sergeant will finish him off with a couple of frag grenades.
Lobel, you are a faggot.
Sergeant Simpson got up and left the hooch. We had to go to a village and do what sounded like public relations work. We were supposed to pass it around that anybody who was a communist and who wanted to change and be on our side was welcome to come. The program was called Chew Hoy, but Pee-wee called it Chewing the Whores. The village was a good 10 minutes away, and everybody seemed relaxed. I wasn't. I was scared. I had never thought of myself as being afraid of anything. I thought I would always be a middle-of-the-road kind of guy. Not too brave, but not too scared either. I was wrong. I was scared every time I left the hooch. On the way to the chopper, I found myself holding my breath. I kept thinking of the noise I had heard when Jenkins got it. By the time we took off, I was panting. When we landed, another squad was already at the landing zone. They told us that all the women in the village were either under 6 or over 600. The village stunk. You could smell it as you got near. There were huts laid out about 15 meters from each other. Some were fairly large. There were people in the village walking around. Some were building a pen of some kind. Like the guys had told us, they were either very young or very old.
All their men is either in the VC Army or the ARVNs. The ARVNs is the South Vietnamese Army, and they supposed to be on our side. The VC is the enemy. This is like the Civil War,
Simpson said.
Sometimes one brother go to the VC and the other brother go to the ARVN. After a while, the brother who fighting with the VC either gonna get killed or wanna leave and join the ARVN.
They don't care what side they fight on? I asked.
They would if they got time to think about it,
Simpson said.
But the ARVN kick they butts if they catch them in the village and they ain't fighting for the ARVN.
And the VC kick they butts if they catch them and they ain't fighting for the VC,
Pee-wee said.
About the size of it.
There was a jeep with medical supplies on it. There were aspirins, a few malaria pills, and some band-aids. A captain was giving them out to the squad.
If you give them malaria pills, make sure they take it on the spot, he said. We don't want this stuff falling into the hands of the VC.
So why are we giving it to them?
Pee-wee asked.
To make them love us,
the captain said. He had a smirk on his face. When we got to the village, some of the people ignored us while others came up and begged for sea rations and whatever else we would give them. Lobel and I gave chocolate bars to a Vietnamese woman. A small girl clung to the woman's legs and Lobel asked her name. The woman told us the girl's name was An Linh. She was about 7, maybe 8. She was small, like all the Vietnamese, compared to us Americans. She looked like a little doll with dark black eyes that dominated a round, brown face. She could have been black, maybe Puerto Rican. Lobel gave her some candy and carried her around on his shoulders. I shook her hand, and she seemed to want to hold on to my fingers. So the three of us went around the village. Sergeant Simpson let a young boy wear his canteen. We broke out more sea rations, the canned stuff the army passes off for food, and shared them with the kids. Me and Lobel ate with An Linh. A woman, her head too big for her small body, brought us some rice, and Lobel took some.
Not bad, he said.
I didn't want any rice. It smelled okay, but I was afraid of being poisoned. My mind went back to Jenkins and how he had been afraid of dying. We hadn't mentioned his name since he got it. I wanted to ask Lobel about that, but I didn't.
If I owned this village, Lobo was saying, I'd make it into a real jungle scene.
It is a real jungle scene, I said.
No, to make it real, you have to have one side of the huts open so you can shoot inside,
Lobo said.
Then you have to get some artificial grass so it stays the same color throughout the whole picture. And finally, you have to get a wind machine so you can make the grass sway.
Why not just shoot it naturally and save the money? I asked.
Aren't you from New York?
Lobo squinted at me. Yeah.
I thought black guys from New York were supposed to be smart, he said. Nobody pays to see anything natural. You pay to see unnatural things look almost natural.
Oh.
Would you want to see Doris Day, or some natural-looking girl with pimples on her forehead and a heat rash on her chest?
The Vietnamese woman who had brought us rice squatted at the edge of the bush to take a leak.
See, you couldn't have any of that,
Lobel said.
People in Hollywood don't pee.
We gave Aunt Lynn as much of our sea rations as she could carry, and Lobo gave her a new name.
She'll never do anything in Hollywood with her name, he said.
We decided to call her Ariel. Lobo said that as soon as we got her to Santa Monica, we had it made. Pee-wee spent most of the time sitting down in a hut until Lieutenant Carroll made him walk around the village. He found a bottle of wine in one of the huts and tried to buy it for $4 American. The people in the hut said that he could take it for nothing, but Lieutenant Carroll said not to. He finally paid $2 for it.
Suppose it's poisoned or something, I asked.
Then I'm gonna die, Pee-wee said.
You taking it back to the base?
Nope.
He borrowed a corkscrew from the woman he had bought the wine from and opened the wine and drank some of it. He made an awful face, then drank some more.
That bad? Yep. But that's one thing I got done.
What is?
That's the first time I ever drank wine from a bottle with a cork in it, he said. Now all I gotta do is make love with a foreign woman and smoke a cigar.
We stayed around the village for the rest of the day, and then it was time to leave. The choppers came in and lifted us out, and we were back at the base before we knew it.
Those gooks will probably be having supper with the VC by the time we sit down to chow,
Brunner said.
How come when you say gooks it sounds like nigger to me?
Johnson asked.
You hear what you want to hear, Brunner said.
What I'm hearing is what you're saying,
Johnson said.
Y'all shut that shit up.
Sergeant Simpson looked from Brunner to Johnson and back again. We had roast beef, mashed potatoes, carrots, carrot cake, and milk for supper. I sat under a tree with Pee-wee, eating. A bug crawled over his leg and he put some mashed potatoes on his knee in the bug's path, but the bug turned and went the other way.
You think he's saying something about the chow?
I asked.
He probably wants some of the roast beef, Pee-wee said. He know it's Sunday and everything, but he ain't getting none.
Sunday? It's not Sunday, it's Wednesday.
Bugs is 4 days behind people,
he said matter-of-factly. Sergeant Simpson saw us and came over. He sat down and asked us how we were enjoying ourselves.
I've seen places I'd rather be, I said. Times Square, Lenox Avenue, Fifth Avenue, you name it. I loves it here, Pee-wee said. I ain't never seen no place in the world better than this place right here. You know what I love the most?
What's that?
Sergeant Simpson was amused by Pee-wee.
The bugs,
Pee-wee said.
You go to sleep at night, they right there. You wake up in the morning, they right there. They better than a damn dog.
So what you guys think about this outfit?
Sergeant Simpson asked.
It looks okay to me, Pee-wee said. I might have to straighten a few things out, though.
Like what?
Sergeant Simpson asked.
Like Brunner,
Pee-wee said.
That boy got a quick lip on him.
Uh-huh.
Sergeant Simpson looked away.
He might got him a quick lip, but Captain Stewart is the one eligible.
Eligible for what?
for major, Sergeant Simpson said, and his best chance of making it is while he over here. His tour is up the 15th day of March.
That's his problem, Pee-wee said.
If he don't pick up his body count soon,
Sergeant Simpson started to get up,
it's going to be your problem.
Chapter 5. The talk about us going to Hawaii was stronger than ever. Me and Pee-wee decided to save our money and have a blast in Hawaii. I also thought about taking some courses at the University of Hawaii. I got a letter from Mama at mail call. Pee-wee got a letter from his girlfriend, but I don't think he liked it. He crumpled it up and threw it in a butt can. Then he got it out again and reread it. Pee-wee, my mother says you shouldn't eat any native food over here, I said. She says it'll give you the runs because of the heat and everything.
Where was she when I needed her?
Pee-wee answered. He had spent the better part of 2 days on the crapper. How was that wine anyway?
How I know?
Pee-wee turned over on his bunk to face me. The only other wine I had in my damn life was some bird back home.
How old you gotta be in Chicago to drink?
Old enough to carry some money to the man, Pee-wee said.
What else your mom's got to say?
You wouldn't be interested, I said.
How you know?
Do you want to hear about how her feet swell up when she walks?
My mama's feet used to swell like that, Pee-wee said. She went to 4 doctors and they couldn't do shit for her. Then she went to a mojo lady who gave her something to soak her feet in.
That work?
Yeah, she can walk all day now.
My mother's a Baptist, I said. She wouldn't go to a mojo lady.
My mama's a Baptist too, but she what you call a sore feet Baptist. Your feet get sore enough, those mojo ladies start looking pretty good.
Wallowick came in pissed off because some motor pool guys were over from Chulai to play poker, and one of them was smoking pot.
You know what this guy is?
Wallowick was stripped down to his drawers and helmet.
A damn white hippie.
A what?
A hippie,
Wallowick said.
Yeah, but you said he was a white hippie before,
Pee-wee said.
Well, he is white,
Wallowick said.
All hippies is white,
Pee-wee said. No, they're not, I said. You gotta come to New York and you can see some black hippies.
Everybody in New York is white, Pee-wee said. Perry is from New York and he sure ain't white. Yes, he is. He passing. You know, we had something like you back in Galesburg,
Wallowick said. He spoke carefully as if he wasn't sure of the language.
We cut it up and put it in formaldehyde. Didn't that leave your daddy lonesome? What's that got to do with my daddy?
Nothing, Wallowick, I said. Pee-wee's just running off at the mouth.
He's a crazy dude,
Wallowick said. He got his towel and went out to our makeshift showers. The next day, we got a new film in. It was something about how Julie Andrews wasn't going to be pushed around anymore. We watched it once, and then we watched it again with the reels mixed up, just to be different. Johnson wanted to get the kids from the village up to the base, but a captain said we couldn't do that. So Johnson and a guy from Delta Company worked on a way to get a generator down to the village so we could show the movie to them. For 2 days, we didn't do anything. Nothing. We didn't have any formations, patrols, nothing. Beautiful. A new supply of insect repellent came in. Lieutenant Carroll said that it was good for making Molotov cocktails. Pee-wee wanted to know how come he was thinking about making Molotov cocktails when we had all the explosives in the world right in camp. Good point. Lieutenant Carroll was a decent kind of guy. He talked a lot about Kansas, which is where he was from. His parents had a farm near Hayes, and his father was proud of him being an officer in the Army. He told us that about his father being proud of him being an officer, twice. It was like he didn't know what to make of it. For Sunday chow, we had roast beef, mashed potatoes, peas, carrots, carrot cake, and milk. We seemed to be having that quite a bit. After chow, we put the television on, but nothing was on. Nothing at all. All we got was static. Brew wrote a letter to President Johnson saying that if he wanted us to fight, he'd better send us some good televisions. And we all signed it. Then we threw it away. Then we watched the movie again without the sound, and we all had parts to play in it. That was the best showing of the movie, especially with Pee-wee as Julie Andrews. We listened to the news on radio and heard about peace talks in Paris. There was a lot of talk about how we were kicking the living crap out of the communists, too. "Turn that up loud as you can," Pee-wee said. "Make sure them Kongs hear it." We heard stories. Stories about fighting in Dak To and down south in Pleiku. But we weren't doing any of it. I thought about it, though. I wanted to know how it felt to shoot at a Kong. The way I thought about it mostly was thinking of what I would say when I got home. Maybe even what I would say to Kenny. Kenny always looked up to me. He couldn't play ball as well as I had when I was his age, and he didn't do as well in school. Maybe it had something to do with Dad leaving when Kenny was 4. He saw all the fights between Dad and Mom, and I think it hurt him more than it did me. I had basketball, and I was good in school. Later, with Mom drinking so much, all Kenny had was me. I wanted to tell him that I did something in the war. I couldn't sleep most of the night. When the rats weren't running around in the dark, the mosquitoes were after you. Pee-wee said that the mosquitoes ran patrols for the rats and afterward they split up their catch. I had to go to the bathroom, but I didn't want to go out to the outdoor latrine. In the first place, it stunk too bad. And in the second, as soon as you pulled your pants down after dark, the mosquitoes bit your ass. For breakfast, we had eggs, coffee, buns, bacon, and grits. Pee-wee complained that he missed the roast beef.
"You getting that for lunch?" the cook said.
"If you serve any more of that damn roast beef, you better bring a rifle with it, because I'm going to put a hole in your ass for every slice of beef I see."
Brunner said it like he meant it, too. The cook, a short blonde guy with a tattoo on his right arm that said, "Mother," and one on his left arm that said, "Linda," spit in a cup and slid it down to Brunner.
"There's your lunch, skinhead."
Captain Stewart, our company commander, came over and asked what was wrong, and Brunner told him what had happened.
"We can only fix what they send us, Captain," the cook said.
"I'm sure the corporal realizes that, soldier," the captain said. "But men who go out and risk their lives every day would like a little more respect."
"I didn't ask to be no damn cook."
"Watch your mouth, soldier." The captain's voice assumed captain's status. Two jets swept by and started hitting a target less than 5 miles away. They must have made a half dozen passes before they were joined by two more. We went outside and watched them, our food still in our hands.
"They must have got a convoy," Brunner said.
He said it to Captain Stewart, and he had his sucking up voice on. Behind him, the cook was spitting in Brunner's coffee and stirring it up. Lobel smiled when he saw it and turned away.
"The VC are trying to get in position for the truce," Captain Stewart said. "They'll try to get into as good a position as they can and then negotiate to hold those positions.
If the war is going to be over, they can have the whole damn country,"
Pee-wee said.
"I don't want the sucker."
"That's not why guys are out there humping, soldier."
The captain pulled out a pad and pen.
"What's your name?"
"Gates, sir," Pee-wee said. "That's G-A-T."
"I can spell, Private. Are you a cook, too?"
Just then, a guy came from HQ-10 and called Stewart. 2 more minutes and everybody was running around except Lieutenant Carroll.
"I think they want all the officers in the HQ tent," I said.
"They want me. They know where to reach me," Carroll said. "Or they can just leave a message with my secretary."
There was a sadness about Lieutenant Carroll. Something that you didn't notice at first, but it was there just the same. Even when he made jokes, it was there. I watched him walk toward his hooch. The choppers. They made a noise like the heartbeat of a machine gun as they came in. My stomach knotted for a second, and I told myself to relax. I had a feeling, a sense that something important was going to happen.
Alpha Company, let's go!
Sergeant Simpson started yelling. Alpha Company started lining up. Sergeant Simpson started checking out our squad, making sure we had the right gear.
What's up?
Lieutenant Carroll had to raise his voice to get over the noise of the choppers.
Charlie Company is pinned down over there,
Simpson said.
They were going to send some Marines in to get them out, but they sent the Marines up to Kaysan. They expect some heavy stuff up there. They got reports of battalion-sized movements.
A battalion of VC?
Carroll looked at Simpson.
That's what they said,
Simpson said. Lieutenant Carroll went off toward HQ tent.
Okay, you guys, this is what's happening. The Air Force is going to try to clear the LZ, and then we'll secure it. Third Platoon's responsibility is just to protect the left flank of the LZ. We move in and push out 100 meters. First Platoon will clear the area of hostiles along with Second Platoon. Fourth Platoon gets the right flank. We shouldn't have any problems unless the VC want to stand and fight a whole damn company.
You hear anybody going out last night?
Pee-wee asked me.
Uh-uh.
Then Charlie Company must have been out there all night, he said.
I hadn't heard of any company going out at night before. Lieutenant Carroll came running back with another lieutenant. He spoke a few words to Sergeant Simpson, and Simpson nodded.
Okay, you guys, make sure your pieces are on safety. Do that right now.
I ran my finger over the safety catch of my M16. It was on.
I don't want no rounds in the chamber until after we hit the area,
Simpson said.
We hit the ground, me and Lieutenant Carroll will mark off the squad assignments. And don't go shooting at nothing until you see something to shoot at. Let's go!
My legs felt heavy as I ran toward the chopper. Lieutenant Carroll was at the door, checking us in. I banged the shit out of my knee getting in. My bad knee, too. I looked at Pee-wee. There was a smear of blood across his face. Simpson noticed it, too.
What the hell happened to you?
This dumb fucker hit me with his rifle.
Pee-wee jerked a thumb at Brunner.
Simple-ass farm boy.
Shut your mouth!
Brunner came back. I had to grab Monaco to keep from falling toward the door as the chopper jerked into the air.
When we hit the zone, keep your distances. Don't bunch up.
Lieutenant Carroll called out.
We shouldn't get any resistance, especially at first. When we dig in, make sure you're dug in behind something solid.
How about my daddy's pickup truck?
Wallowick asked.
I wouldn't mind going home and getting behind that baby.
I couldn't see a thing outside the chopper. The door gunner was reading a comic book. He looked cool. I thought of saying a prayer, but I couldn't think of one. I didn't know one prayer. Under my breath, I apologized to God.
Yo, Pee-wee.
What?
We get back to the base, remind me to memorize a prayer.
I know one,
Pee-wee said.
What is it? Flying into combat, about to have a fit. Lord, if you listening, please get me out of this shit. Just say a Hail Mary,
Monaco yelled. From where we were at the base, the action looked like it was just a few miles away. We were in the choppers nearly 10 minutes and still going. I didn't know we were even getting near until the door gunner put his hand on his headset, as if he were listening to something, then moved to his gun, pointed it down at the lush green jungle below us, and started firing. The .50 caliber started spitting, and the shells came out at an enormous rate. They were flying back into the chopper and banging around. I dropped my rifle. Monaco pushed it back toward me with his foot. We didn't just come down. We damn near fell down. I was grabbing for the sides and shaking. I thought the chopper had been hit.
Get ready,
Sergeant Simpson called out.
Monaco, you go first. Don't none of y'all shoot Monaco.
Monaco had his eyes closed, praying.
Now,
the machine gunner yelled over his shoulder. Monaco went out in a flash, and Lieutenant Carroll was right behind him. Johnson jumped out next and fell. I was next in the door, looked down, and saw that we were still about 10 feet off the ground.
Jump, shithead!
I jumped and landed across Johnson's legs. I got up first and started to help him up, just as two more bodies landed on top of us. We started crawling away from under the chopper.
Let's hit it! Spread out!
We spread out and started moving toward the trees. I kept as low as I could, bent over at the waist. We kept moving ahead, with Monaco running like he was crazy or something. There was no fire, and we stopped in a pretty dense area.
Stay down! Stay alert!
We didn't move for a while. I looked up and saw the choppers in the distance. Then they were gone. Even the sound was gone. The only thing I could hear was the heavy sound of my own breathing. We were on our own. Simpson started going around, placing the squad. Johnson was off to one side with the 60-caliber machine gun. Brew was his feeder. I gave Johnson the thumbs-up sign, and he gave it back. The air in Nam was always hard to breathe. It was heavy, thicker than the air back home. Now it was harder. I opened my mouth wide and sucked in as much air as I could, but it didn't seem to be enough. We waited 10 minutes. Nothing. Then we began to hear small arms firing off to our right. I looked, but I couldn't see anything. You could smell it, though. You could smell the stink of gunpowder and hear the distant burping of the machine guns. We waited 20 minutes. Nothing. The sound of gunfire subsided. The smoke didn't. It drifted our way like a gentle mist through the tall trees. Behind us, the choppers were coming in again. They went back into the landing zone. Then they were gone again. We waited. 40 minutes.
Brunner, back up!
We started out, moving less quickly than when we came in. The landing zone, without the excitement, the fear, was a longer distance away. We reached it finally, and I was near enough to Carroll to hear him call the choppers in. We were on the choppers and out in minutes, with Simpson screaming at us to get our weapons on safety. We got to the base area, and I remembered Jenkins. I was behind Brunner and followed the path he walked. We got back to the hooch, and Simpson came in.
How did Charlie Company do?
Wallowick asked.
They lost 9 people, Sergeant Simpson said. 1 platoon lost 1 man, got 6 wounded.
How many VCs were out there?
They don't know, but what they do know is that they didn't have on no damn pajamas. They was North Vietnamese regulars. They still talking about us going to Hawaii?
Wallowick asked.
Yeah, they talking about bringing some LERP teams up here too,
Sergeant Simpson said.
That the stuff I don't like.
When he left, I asked Wallowick what a LERP team was.
It's a long-range surveillance team,
Wallowick said.
They don't fight if they can't help it. They just go out and see what's out there.
Why does Sergeant Simpson think that's so bad?
I don't know, Wallowick said. But he didn't live to be a short-timer by being stupid.
Lieutenant Carroll came and asked me about my profile. He said that he saw that I had mentioned it when I first got into the company. I told him how I had hurt the knee playing ball.
It bother you too much to go on patrols?
Not so far, I said. I just don't want to get messed up because of the knee. He looked at me for a long time without saying anything. Then he looked away for a moment and back at me.
Perry, I don't want to take you into combat if the knee's really bad, he said. It's not just you, I mean. Everybody in the squad depends on everybody else.
I guess it's not really that bad, I said.
Look, I don't want to avoid the issue, he said. If you tell me you can't go on patrol,
I'll see if I can get you transferred to another outfit. If you tell me that you can go on patrol, then we'll just wait until the profile comes down and take a look.
I'll wait for it, I said.
I don't like putting you on the spot, he said. I really don't. But we're all in this mess together.
Sure.
When he left, Pee-wee asked me what the conversation was about, and I told him.
Don't go being no fucking hero, Pee-wee said.
What would you have said? I asked him.
Probably the same thing you did, but I would have been pissed off at myself, he said.
I'm a little pissed, I said.
I really wasn't pissed, because I knew the real question wasn't about my knee. I thought the knee would be okay. The real question was what I was doing, what any of us were doing, in Nam.
Chapter 6. I got guard duty with Lobel. Sergeant Walcott from Bravo Company was sergeant of the guard, and he gave us a pep talk. We were on from 8 to midnight. There were sandbags around the shallow foxhole we had to sit in. At Fort Devens, a 4-foot-deep hole was plenty. Now it didn't seem so great. It was about 7 feet wide. I had my M16 and Lobel had his and an M79 grenade launcher. There were sandbags piled in front of the foxhole, with a place to shoot through. The perimeter of the camp was marked by intricate patterns of barbed wire barriers. The wire itself had razor-sharp protrusions as well as trip flares planted throughout. Lobo and I had to watch about 60 meters of the wire to make sure that no VC broke through.
Perry, you okay?
Yeah.
You look a little uptight.
I feel a little uptight.
What's the matter?
Still thinking about Jenkins, I guess, I answered.
Who's Jenkins?
The guy I came in with. You remember he stepped on a mine?
Yeah.
Nothing can get through that much wire, I said.
Nothing can get through it without getting messed up,
Lobel answered.
But they try.
I didn't answer. For all the talk, the war was still far away. All you had to do was to be careful, and you'd be okay. Jenkins hadn't been careful.
You know, Perry, if I was going to make a movie over here, I'd make it a love story,
Lobel said dreamily.
How come you always talk about movies? Because they're the only real thing in life,
Lobel said. He slumped down in the foxhole.
You didn't think any of this was real, did you?
Look, Lobel, why don't you get up and watch the wire with me?
You scared?
Yeah, man.
Oh, okay.
He got up, just like that. There were things chirping out beyond where I could see. I remembered going to the old cowboy movies and seeing the cowboys sitting around a campfire and the Indians sneaking up on them and making noises like owls and stuff. I looked over toward Lobel, who was looking out toward the wire.
Hey, Lobel.
I didn't mean anything, I said.
I guess I'm just a little nervous.
No sweat. He wore his helmet down low over his eyes and the top part of his face was in shadow.
I'm a little nervous, too. I'd be real nervous, except I know none of this is real, and I'm just playing a part.
What part are you playing?
The part where the star of the movie is sitting in the foxhole explaining how he feels about life and stuff like that. You never get killed in movies when you're doing that. Anytime you get killed in a movie, it's after you set it up.
You play a part when we were on patrol?
That wasn't a patrol,
Lobel said.
That was a firefight.
I thought a firefight was when you shot at something.
Anytime anybody is getting shot at, it's a firefight, Lobel said. Anyway,
I was playing Lee Marvin as a tough sergeant. That's my best part. It got quiet again. Then I heard somebody's radio. It sounded a little like Wilson Pickett. What do you think the VC are like? I asked. I mean, really like. Who knows? There were two radios on. In the distance, I heard what sounded like a chopper, but could have been a generator. The shadows were deepening. I didn't want to